Hi, welcome to NDA Social Sector Podcast. I am Nitisha. Today we are joined by Nitish Raj and Rahul Rishi at NDA. We will be discussing the ruling of SCOTUS in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization and the impact it would have on international funding from the US. So if one of you could just tell us a little more about the decision of the SCOTUS and the constitutional aspects of it.
Sure. Yes, thank you. On June 24, 2022, United States Supreme Court, that being short called as SCOTUS, overturned the 1973 decision of Roe versus Wade in the case titled Dobbs versus Jackson. By a 6-3 majority, the court held that the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion and overruled the cases of Roe and Casey. This case actually arose from the Gestational Age Act, which barred the abortion of an unborn human being of gestational age greater than 15 weeks. The crucial question before the court was whether the US Constitution, when correctly interpreted, grants the right to an abortion. Although the US Constitution includes no direct reference of the right to an abortion, numerous constitutional provisions have been proposed as prospective homes for an implied constitutional right. Roe had ruled that the right to abortion was part of the right of privacy guaranteed by 1st, 4th, 5th, 9th, and 14th Amendments. Therefore, in this case, the court first examined the test it had used in previous instances to establish whether the 14th Amendment's reference to liberty guarantees a specific right to the people. According to the court's rulings, the Due Process Clause protects two types of substantive rights: rights provided by the first 8 amendments to the Constitution, and secondly, rights deemed fundamental but not stated elsewhere in the Constitution. As per conservative constitutionalists, the challenge in determining whether a right comes into any of these categories is whether the right is deeply established in US history and culture and important to nation's scheme of ordered liberty. The abortion clinic's contention before the court was that the history is irrelevant. It didn't play well with the court, unfortunately, as it contradicted the very standard various judges of the US Supreme Court have used in deciding whether an alleged right that is not specified explicitly in the Constitution is still protected by the 14th Amendment.
Thank you. I think the dissenting opinion very aptly concluded that in overruling Roe and Casey, the SCOTUS is betraying its guiding principles and the millions of American women who have lost a fundamental constitutional protection. So from a legal perspective, what impact would this have on the laws of the other countries and the policies, and in specific, what impact would it have on India?
Well, our Indian Supreme Court relies heavily on the constitutional principles posited by its US counterpart for developing its constitutional jurisprudence. Even very recent Supreme Court constitution judgments like right to privacy, Aadhaar, Sabrimala, amongst others, they have heavily relied on US Supreme Court. Even decades ago, they have for Jehovah Witnesses case in Bejoy Emanuel relied extensively on US Supreme Court. So I think now either the SCOTUS will lose its global value as a bastion of constitutional rights, or other major global constitutional courts will start shrinking their constitutional jurisprudence if in case they have still happen to refer to SCOTUS. But moreover, overturning Roe versus Wade would jeopardize the US international family planning initiatives, which are mostly located inside development cooperation. The majority advances that we have seen in maternal and child health and family planning access is due to US financing schemes. But still, more than 218 million women in low and middle income countries still have unmet family planning requirements.
So this judgment puts the pregnant woman's health and economic stability in jeopardy in both low and high income nations. Rahul, could you tell us about the impact on the US financing policies?
Sure. So before I go on to explain this question, I would just like to add on to what my colleague Nitish had earlier expressed his views on. So in the sense that, look, yes, developing economies and judicial system of these developing economies do look at the US Supreme Court judgment on Roe versus Wade very carefully. How is it going to have ramifications in the longer run, both jurisprudentially and institutionally, is something which only time can tell. I think it would be a little preemptive for us to try looking at specific countries' judicial system through the US Supreme Court lens. However, we should also look at this judgment through a broader lens of how global economy as well as global politics has been moving on towards the right, and the Supreme Court's judgment is a reflection of that, for the reason that recently three judges were appointed to the US Supreme Court by the previous regime, which was the Trump administration, and we could see a clear supermajority tilt towards the conservative side of polity. So that also is a reflection of how things are going to shape up before the US Supreme Court on rights-based issues, and abortion rights was one of them. We have seen such similar stance being taken by the US Supreme Court on gun control. So I think it's a trend which will have a certain policy effects on countries where US soft power is intrinsically involved, particularly in the field of maternal health, women health, hygiene, and such related rights, reproductive rights, where there are a lot of US foundations that are being funded and they are quite active in this space, particularly in Africa and in Asia, South Asia in particular. So how exactly are funds going to get affected is something which would be a function of what budgetary allocation would the US House of Representatives make. But it would, I wouldn't be surprised to see a certain funding cut that would happen at the US level, and hence its percolation downstream may also get affected. And in light of any potential conscripted funding that may come, we will have to start looking at innovative ways of social financing through which those funds could then be amplified, in the sense that we could look at blended finance or social finance, we could look at impact bond structures, we could look at different ways of impact financing, as well as FCRA being one of the traditional corridors that we always have, but something which is more on the innovative side of bringing those monies into India. However, we would also see an acute requirement of a lot of intermediary non-profits that work at a grassroots level on these issues, wanting to scale up, wanting to be more capable in terms of understanding different instruments through which they could get funding. So it's also going to nudge a lot of such grassroots service providers to relook at their existing operational structure, financing structure, and see if they could probably devise or new or creative ways to bring those monies into India through the US corridor. And that is something which will allow for some sort of a sectoral churning in terms of such funding routes being explored at a US India level.
Okay, so this, like you mentioned, this case has cast the path for the US to remove government funding for overseas development programs that fund.
Not necessarily. Look, what's happening in the US is its domestic polity. Most of these fundings that do happen either happen, between or amongst grantees here in India and specific donors, or it happens through the US External Affairs Arm, which is the US aid. So there are government approved budgets that are being allocated every year. And when it comes to their external affairs, it may not always be necessary or true that the domestic polity will have to be reflected in the same figure in their external affairs policies as well. So I don't see a positive correlation, you know, to that extent there. But yes, a lot of nonprofits that are in the philanthropy world considered as quote unquote left centric or espouse such liberal rights will have to start looking at more creative and different forms of financing and I would not be surprised if there is going to be some funding cut to begin with as an aftermath of this judgment, but I think gradually such US donors and philanthropic foundations or such advocacy groups will start to regather and think and strategize what's going to be the next course of action. Yeah.
So you mentioned that there could be some internal changes in the policies. How do you think the Indian NGOs would specifically be affected by that, or are there any provisions which still give them like a saving ground?
Look, Indian NGOs do not directly get affected with this judgment in the sense that this judgment does seem to have an ancillary or a tertiary effect in the way funds would continue to flow from the US to different jurisdictions. And to that extent, we have reasons to believe that we could see some funding cut. But again, that would also be a function of how those funds are going to be allocated, you know, for the next budgetary year by the Congress and approved by the House. So I think it's subject to a lot of ifs and buts. I do not see any immediate funding threat per se. However, the broader espousal of interests that get reflected through activities concerning maternal health, population control, safe sex, sex education, and such issues like that, I think in terms of its thematic significance, the significance is not going to get reduced. However, the US-India corridor chat that used to happen on these issues between grantees and donors, probably that may dampen a little bit for now, and how exactly and when would it pick up again is something for us to wait and see.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can read a detailed analysis on the topic at the link mentioned in the description. And if you have any queries or comments on the podcast, you can email us at the email address mentioned in the description. Thank you.